This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I think it would be good if people understood a bit more, because it's when people go, oh, I can't be bothered to recycle because I don't want to wash it up, or it's not going to matter anyway. Just to actually be told about how it does impact, about how it does matter, because unless people have an emotional attachment, I don't think they'll do it.
Welcome back to season two of the Tread Lightly podcast. If you thought season one was just about recycling, hugging trees, think again, because this time we're taking things up a notch, talking about everything from how community shapes our planet to why faith might just have something to say about the environment, and even digging into the quirks of human behaviour.
I think we all realised quite quickly that the environmental conversation is way too big to keep simple. So we're diving in headfirst at the deep end. Buckle in, because this season we're going to get real. Let's go.
Let's do this. Hello and welcome back to this episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. And today we are going to be joined by the lovely Jess, who is a student and also a volunteer with us at the Rain & Eco Hub. Hello, Jess.
Hello, how are you?
I am all right. That's my line, actually. You've just stole it. That's okay. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And how are you, Liz?
I'm good. I'm excited for this episode today.
So tell us, why are we talking to you, Jess? What are we talking about?
Well, I'm a volunteer at the Eco Hub, and I just help out. We've done litter picks. I went to the awards. I do a few bits around, and I just wanted to come on and talk about how eco initiatives affect young people.
Love that. That is such an important topic, don't you think?
Yeah, young people and the environment is a piece that we've not really done at the minute. But when we've been out and about, they're definitely a group that we need to learn from and hear from. I think their voice is very, very important, but not necessarily
always heard.
Always heard, yeah.
Yeah. So have you got any stats, or what's the crack? Because you are stat girl normally, Liz.
I am normally stat girl. Well, it was an interesting report that was released by the OVO Foundation looking at the state of climate education, called the state of climate education. So the Seahorse Environmental Foundation found figures across the environmental sector, which were insane. So the key findings were that 72% of UK 14 to 18 year olds would welcome the opportunity to learn more about climate change in schools. 68% felt climate change education should be included across all subjects, and 80% of the 700 students surveyed thought that more climate education would help them make better informed choices about travel, food and energy. And there's loads more to it as well, but I think that the underpinning was that there was a huge rise in eco-anxiety felt by young people, and that schools are not adequately addressing this or anything. You know, there is no provision really for climate change education. There's bits in geography and
I think a lot of people, like people that work in schools, what they've said to us is they don't feel equipped, they don't feel like confident enough to be able to have those kind of conversations. So I guess, like, hearing that stuff, does that, any of that resonate with you? Like,
yeah, like, I don't think it's a teacher's fault because they've got everything to cover. But I think it would be good if people understood a bit more, because it's when people go, oh, I can't be bothered to recycle because I don't want to wash it up, or it's not going to matter anyway. Just to actually be told about how it does impact, about how it does matter, because unless people have an emotional attachment, I don't think they'll do it.
And for you, I guess it's kind of having somebody that empathises with you and your worries and your concerns about it, and kind of like, you know, not bats your corner, but it's like sharing that same message, isn't it, with other people? Because teachers are influential. We've spoken about this before in season one. We interviewed some students from a local school, the Howard, and we were saying, you know, teachers are really influential when it comes to teaching students and getting them to kind of see things from a different perspective and behaviour change and all that sort of things.
I think the teachers obviously care, but it must be so difficult. So say, I'd take an art department, for example. You're buying in loads of paint, there's toxins in the paint, you're using art and craft stuff at primary school level. But then if you go and make art and craft stuff and cover things in glue, it then stops being able to be recycled. But there's an expectation, I guess, from students and from parents to still be able to have that kit and equipment. Do you think, Jess, it would be, how would that work from a young person's perspective to be able to say, got to do things differently, or these are your choices, or just having a conversation about it? How could schools start to look at environmentalism kind of more in the round for young people?
Well, I think especially in art and in primary schools as well, I think rather than trying to buy new all the time, potentially being like just using the recycling and stuff. I remember that used to be really fun. I used to enjoy that, having to like find stuff from home and then bring it into school and then use that to then make art with. I think that's quite a cool concept. And potentially whether they are able to start, I think if there's more demand for like non-toxic paints and things like that, then the price will go down. So potentially to try and just start doing little changes, and then more people will want to do it, if you know what I mean.
Do you think young people care? Do you hear that in your kind of circles? Do you hear that young people think about these things, or do you think it's, are they waiting to be told, or do you think they already know?
Well, some people just don't care, but same with adults, I think. But I think some people do care about the bigger picture and image, but it's kind of spoken about so much, but not much is done. It's almost a bit jokey now, because it's kind of just be more eco, but nothing ever actually is specifically kind of said, apart from just really little things. So I think people are like a bit scared and stuff, but they're just joking.
Don't really know what to do.
They don't really know what to do. They're just like, I've got a big problem, but how am I going to be able to do anything?
And I think that makes it everybody's problem. So what I'm hearing from you is they see that it's an issue. They don't really know what they can physically do. They feel voiceless, powerless to be able to make any of those big changes because the issue is so huge, right?
And I think it's a bit, and it feels a bit silly when someone's like, just turn off the tap. Just
put your recycling in put your yogurt pot in the
but
recycling
But then it's also
bin.
Like, everything's going to die, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like so big to then just have such small
things to do.
And I think for adults probably feel like that too, especially if you're on the fringes or you're just joining that conversation. That's kind of what people say to us all the time, isn't it? But imagine if you are then, you know, below voting age, for example, you are, you know, still at school, so you don't actually have as much rights as an adult. That's even more like pushing you down, isn't it? You feeling like that you haven't got a voice and you aren't being able to do anything about it.
How engaged are you with politics, Jess? And the second question, and part of that question is do you think young people should be more involved in politics with regards to having conversations about the climate crisis?
Yeah, because I think in the kindest way, the older generation was very fast with how they wanted to get their money, how they wanted to get their resources and stuff, and kind of screwed over a bit. But I think the younger generation does want to be heard, because it will be their future having to deal with especially repercussions of older people's views. So I think it's quite good to get people involved when it will be to do with them.
Do you think involved with politics before they get to voting age? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but also just to understand, because I think a lot of people will just follow their parents, even if they don't necessarily agree, because there is no talk about it. I mean, hardly any schools do economics, and I only learned a bit about it in economics, and there's business, but there's never anything about politics until A level, which is when you can vote anyway, so you don't have any information.
But that you don't learn about politics?
No.
To A level, that's insane.
I think we've spoken about this before, because it actually blows my brain a little bit that you get to voting age at 18, you're right, and then you go...
I do what mum did.
Yeah, you go, everyone goes, you're going to vote, you're going to vote, oh, this is my first time voting. Like, my son cannot wait until he's of an age where he can vote. Like, he's so excited for it. But yeah, you're right. Like, most young people would just go with what their family go with. I mean, we're lucky in Medway. I don't know if other places do this, but we have Medway Youth Parliament. So you are able to join a Medway Youth Council.
I didn't even know that, you see.
There you go. You learn something new every day. But you can, and you can put your voice to it. There are some really great young people that are really, like you, able to articulate their feelings and their things that they care about. So go check that out. I think you'd be a great candidate for that.
Yeah, I do. Do you think, what obstacles do you think stand in the way of young people having more influence over kind of political and environmental decisions?
I think quite a lot of the time, quite a few don't take it very seriously. And like, it is a big concept. So I think it's hard, especially when some really don't care. It then kind of ruins it for ones who do, I feel, in a sense.
Do you think it's hard to step up and say, I really, really care about this?
Yeah, especially at like teenager age. I feel like peer pressure and just trying to fit in is the bigger thing than trying to stand up for what you believe in. So I don't think that helps at all.
Do you think there's any way that could be overcome?
I potentially think, and again, in schools, rather than the focus on just like, follow this and pass, have more of like, what are you interested in? What are you interested in? Who are you? Kind of is more of the idea behind schools, that people don't feel they just need to get by.
So you can just follow your passions and follow your interests and
just find out who you are a bit, yeah. So you don't feel like the need to just
conform.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I get that. I hear that.
And do you reckon within that then there would be more people that really do care, but they just sit there a little bit kind of frozen to the spot, almost not quite knowing where they can put that voice?
Yeah, and also like, I feel like some people think if they say, they'll be a bit ridiculed by either adults or other kids. And some people just don't even know what to do about it, I don't think.
And that's why we're talking to you, because you are flipping the script on that and you are getting up and you're being active in your community to be able to tackle some of these issues. So you've been involved in quite a few projects, actually. We ran an anti-idling campaign in Raynham and you were part of that consultation process, getting other people involved in that conversation. Those sorts of things. What's the missing piece to get other people your age kind of involved in those sort of activism?
I think people do care. I just think there's a lot of other, for them, more pressing issues, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, even about like grades and stuff like that, I think people are just like, I can't even begin to think about that right now. I've got to make some friends, do this, do that.
Yeah.
I just think people don't have it at the forefront of their mind all the time. But I think it's also the worry about being like different and saying something actually affects you. I think everybody just says, no, nothing affects me, nothing affects me. It's kind of the motto. But yeah, I think people just don't want to say that they are worried or think differently to someone else.
Yeah, and I hear that, because I think that's true for adults too. I don't think that those are just for young people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think when you do get the occasional kind of success story where you challenge something at work or challenge something, you know, out in society and say, oh, you know, it would be great if we could have litter bins at work. It'd be great if you could. There was an example that we had this week of encouraging a school not to use dead fish in the kind of biology lesson. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But you do have to be a bit brave to be able to say, this is how I feel about this and I would love it to be different.
Yeah.
So to be able to do that as a young person is really difficult.
Are you tired of the same old chat about saving the planet? You know, like the reduce, reuse, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to shake things up, because season two of the Tread Lightly podcast is here and we're diving deeper than your recycling bin.
This season, we're talking about community, faith, and yes, even why humans behave so weirdly sometimes when it comes to conversations about the environment.
Oh my gosh, they do. But there's no boring lectures here, so just real talk. Tough questions and a little bit of banter along the way, because let's face it, we all need to lighten up when we're trying to save the planet, right?
So if you're ready to stop tiptoeing around some of the big environmental stuff, get real and join the conversations. Come Tread Lightly with us.
Catch season two of the Tread Lightly podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, like now.
If you were to, let's take Raynham rather than kind of globally, you've got limitless money and you've got limitless influence. What kind of changes would you like to see in your hometown?
Probably changes in what is taught in school, to kind of try and make people have it as their initiative rather than being forced. I think that would probably help, because if people are forced to do something, they obviously won't try and do as well as they can.
What do you mean by that? Expand on that a bit more.
As in, like, if you're forced to like go pick up litter or try and be more eco, especially with just the try and be more eco, it's like, what? Especially, like I said before, it's such a big problem, such small fixes. But I think if they then try and instead try and make people want to, because they understand that like their actions have consequences, I think that would probably be helpful.
So limitless money just to try and weave this through the curriculum and through schools and make it be that people care, because it's just talked about so much more, do you think?
Yeah, and I think showing the positive side effects of helping the environment, I think it's a bit, in this country especially, like, you don't really see the effects. I don't think you see them really in the UK. Well, you do a bit, but just like a bit of irregular weather and stuff. But you don't ever see like a turtle being strangled, if you get what I mean by that. I think understanding, like, and with recycling as well, the fact that they say only 9% doesn't get recycled, but no one ever goes to see the landfill sites. You don't ever get seen the repercussions of your bad actions.
It's quite hidden from you, isn't it? Gosh, yeah, that's true. You don't see, yeah. And even, I guess, in the really, really hot days in the middle of a heat wave,
you just want to go tan. You don't really think about, this is because of this, and let me look at all these animals who are going to be suffering.
So what could that look like then? Short of like making new curriculums and making new lessons, which is still the same kind of turn up, learn, got to get my grades. Is there any other way that that could be like more inspiring for people to kind of come and join?
Potentially actually trips and stuff to have to go see it. It might be a bit horrible, but I know that people have gone to see I know this is really deep, but gone to like Auschwitz and stuff, and that's really changed their like look on it when you kind of talk about it, but then when you see it, it's like insane.
You're able to be like there, present. You're able to like speak to people that are really knowledgeable, and you're able to see things from a really different perspective than looking at it in a book. And I think the part of it where you were saying, you know, getting people to do things because they want to rather than being told to, I think is true for anybody. Like if I was to say to you now, like, right, I want you to, I don't know, I'm like looking at this room, like, right, I want you to clean this room, you've got 20 minutes, I just want you to, you'll be like, no, don't do that.
Either you want to get paid,
I'll look after your if you want to get paid, just but like you'll be like, you might be like, oh, actually I want to look after your plants I see need a little bit of TLC.
But on the day where we did this room up, because it was going to become a studio,
yeah,
and there was an end goal that really mattered, and it was going to be an amazing studio. Yeah. We're all in here on our hands and knees, like making
because
it nice,
because
we,
yeah,
the motivation
we invested,
to do it.
Yeah,
if you knew that, like, you not buying that plastic bottle and you trying to do this for the environment and that, and then you were like able to literally, like an app, like if you're then able to like see a butterfly be born or a squirrel run around, you know what I mean? If you're able to have it, it's more of a 2 + 2 = 4, like you see an outcome kind of thing.
So for us as adults, it's about taking a step back and giving young people the space and a platform to be able to say the things that they love and that they care about. And then for us to be able to say, what do you need us to help you with? What do you want us to do? And then moving out the way so that you can get on and do it.
Yeah. And just to see kind of like an outcome for your actions, I think also helps in both positive and negative ways.
Because I wonder what it would look like, honestly, if you took the young people of Raynham and you said, tell me, well, we did a youth survey, didn't we, locally? I think we had about 3,000 responses where we said to young people, what is it that you care about? What's missing from Raynham? And they all said a youth space. They all said a youth space. But imagine if that was their number one priority, right? They wanted a space to be able to come together. Well, that could link into so many different areas, right? In terms of, you know, environmental, community, kind of, you know, cohesion, kind of cultural stuff, like diversity, like so many different areas could be tackled by having a physical space where you're able to come together. People can connect, they can have those conversations to be like, great, what is it that you care about? What do you, do you know what I mean? Like, I think we just need more people that are able to ask them questions and not be offended by the answers.
I agree with you. And I think because young people are so much less kind of tarnished by what's been before, with an environmental head on, it probably becomes more second nature that would be something they think about. An example I'll give you is we were, the organisation I work for, were looking to get some merchandise. So we were moving ahead with what the merchandise would look like using the same old supplier. And it was the younger people, the people who had the kind of entry level jobs just starting up, who were saying, when you go and organise your merchandise, think about what it's made from. Think about where it's being shipped from. You know, does it have to always be that it's kind of the nylon-y lycra stuff? Or can we start to get something that's made with bamboo or made in a different way? And everyone around the room was like, yeah, of course. Like, it wasn't the case that it couldn't be done before.
They just
but it was the young people just being like,
it just wasn't in the top of their
priority.
That's
what I say about school, is that if it's kind of taught from a young age, like I now forever turn off the tap when I'm brushing my teeth kind of thing, which I don't know whether it has always been taught, but that was one small thing that I know I always do because I was just told to do it.
It's ingrained in you now. You just kind of automatically do it. I think being able to get young people to be carbon literate, which I can say now because...
Talk to us, carbon literate, Kayleigh.
Well, I'm not just yet. I have submitted it today and I will see if I pass or not. But just doing that carbon literacy course, I think if that could be rolled out across schools... One, for staff, like just as a starter, and then for them to be able to roll that out to students, I think is a great shout. And also, I might just bag that.
100%.
Might bag that for Raynham. Because being able to understand, you're right, that my yoghurt pot being put in a recycling bin, yay, that's the right thing to do. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to do it. But you don't feel like, you feel like it's a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're able to have... you know, carbon reducing measures that you're able to kind of and be confident to have those conversations with that sort of language, where I'd say, actually, if we did this, I can predict we'll reduce this amount of carbon. Like, that's where young people are at and probably where they want to be. But
I guess it's difficult though, because they couldn't necessarily go, right, okay, mum and dad, can we go on one less holiday this year? Or can we all cycle to the shops today? Or can we change our provider? It's really difficult to have those bigger family-based conversations around.
I think the same about, the same about like vegetarian, veganism. I'm vegetarian, and when I tell people, some people are like, no, I can never do that. I can't believe you can do it, blah, 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 you're meant to eat meat. But some people are like, how can you do it? And I'm like, once it's just changed from having meat in your fridge to having vegetarian alternatives, it's not that hard anymore. And they're like, oh, I would, they were like, I reckon I could probably go vegetarian. Probably, they're always like, apart from one thing. And I'm like, well, you can still do that and call yourself vegetarian. Like, you don't have to go 100 on nothing. But they also say, like, I couldn't do it now though, because I couldn't ask my mum to cook another meal.
You have to convince their mum, yeah. That's the hard thing, isn't it? Or their dad. But then that's where then you do feel that bit less power in the home environment. So then taking it outside and doing things within the community has got to be the only way you can really, truly feel like you've got some power to do something.
I mean, if we take like an average family, I realise I don't come from an average family, so just saying that. But like if you had an average family and you kind of went home and you was like, look, not being funny, but this is breaking my balls right now. I don't really feel like I can eat meat, as an example. Instead, I will just have extra vegetables. Like an average family would go, all right, do you know what I mean?
I don't feel I can ask mum to cook another meal. She's going to have to do some research into this, especially busy families. That's
as an example, right? I don't have like veggie alternatives, right? So I don't have like corn sausages or like corn. But if I do a roast dinner, my son still eats meat. So he would still have a meat on a roast dinner. And then his friends are like, oh, what are you having today? Sunday. Oh, you can't have Sunday roast. And I'm like, yeah, we're having Sunday roast. Yeah. And he's like, but you don't have meat. I'm like, yeah, we just have extra vegetables. We just have vegetables, Yorkshire, potatoes, stuffing.
Which I guess is fine. I guess just replacing that protein might be.
Yeah, we can get protein, so many other things.
I see what you mean, yeah. Instead of having the vegan alternative, I see what you mean, yeah.
Vegetarian, I mean, I'm not even talking about vegan, but like
broad beans, lentils and stuff.
Yeah.
People just say, I hate the taste, hate the texture. I'm like, when have you ever tried anything? Like, I remember the McDonald's burgers used to be disgusting. I don't know if you have ever tried the veggie McDonald's burgers.
The veggie deluxe.
The original ones, though, but they had like squashed up peas.
It was mashed up kind of peas and potato.
It was like left deep fried, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then it was literally just mashed. That was disgusting. But now I'm like, try it now, not like 10, yeah,
the actual,
even 10
the
years
actual McDonald's now is fine. McPlant is absolutely sound.
Especially
lunch.
When something's battered, or like, and it's very vegetarian now, especially when something's battered or put in a bolognese or like southern fried. Which you can get the same. You can get like bacon, you can get ribs now.
I guess stuff like, we've got like beef Wellington in the freezer, and it's a vegan beef Wellington. And truly, once you've got like the gravy in it and the sauces and the, what's it called, pastry.
You can just give it a go, can't you?
Yeah. But you're right though, you do still have to get your parents to go and be on board.
Especially if they're really busy.
Mm. I've loved this conversation.
I have as well. I think, yeah.
Just as like, same.
I would love to ask you just one last thing though before we wrap up, because I know that there are kind of decision makers out there that listen to this podcast, and there are people that have got influence and power out there that do tune.
As do you.
Thank you very much.
Of course. But what would you say to those people who up at kind of council level are writing the environmental plan for Medway or for Kent or for whoever's listening to this, for a young person's lens, what kind of things would you ask of them to consider?
I think try and get a range of people with, obviously, who come from different areas to have some input into what you're saying, because if everyone kind of looks and has similar backgrounds, they will all agree with each other. And also, if you're going to make decisions, try and explain, I've decided this because of these reasons helps. Being told what to do, it's hard to be told what to do and you don't know why. Whereas if you know the reasons why, I think it's easier to then understand.
That's a really good point. Probably true for adults as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
I think I've learned a lot.
Yeah, I do as well. And I think a lot of what you say is very true. And I think we need to think through a young person's lens. And I think it'll probably help adults as well.
So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jess.
Bye. Day.
That's it for today's episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe, like Kaylee and myself, even picked up a new perspective along the way.
If you did, do not keep it to yourself. You need to give us a like, rate the podcast and share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And of course, follow us on all of our social media, which is hilarious because we are on LinkedIn, TikTok, oh my gosh, Facebook and Instagram. And you can also stay in the loop for more episodes and updates. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep treading lightly.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.